people and places. With your host, Brad Banjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
How you doing, pal?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing okay. You know what? I want to welcome all the pals out there to our show, Shift and Steer. It's episode 402, and oh my gosh, we made it through the hurricane of 23. It was nothing in Orange County.
Nothing. I mean,
Palm Springs, some outlying areas. Yeah, they had something, but I don't know about you. Where I was, it was a big nothing burger. Now, you were out of town, but when you came home, did anybody complain? Was the bay overflowing or anything like that?
No, it's just so we were up at Monterey Car Week, and while we were there, just like everyone's phone was blowing up because the media was going, hey, it's, you know, we're going to fall off California and float away. But we got some rain on the way home, but it really wasn't that bad. And then it was done, you know.
Yeah,
I guess I guess it could have been worse.
Well, it's funny because everybody from around the country, and including my wife, who was out of town, she's like, is everything okay? And I'm like, you know, because they're watching it on the news, and the news only shows the worst stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they don't go to Orange County where it's just a slight drizzle and go, yeah, nothing's going on here, you know.
And look, some areas further out in the desert got it worse, and there's definitely some flooding and stuff happening. But
you can't go to Phoenix because the freeway's closed. But
yeah,
it showed a semi. And like we said, some outlying areas did get hammered. But they showed a semi on Interstate 10. This thing was up to its windows in, and it was a full-size semi.
Yeah.
Up to its windows in mud, where it was just driving along, and all of a sudden all the mud came across and just hammered that thing. So the guy's hanging out the window, and, you know, so some people did. We understand, and, you know, man, people had their homes trashed and stuff like that. But we were fortunate, and thank you. So let's talk about cars. Monterey Car Week was this past weekend. I had to miss it. I love going up there, and have had something come up the last couple of years. And I even had an invite to, you know, I had a free room. I had everything, but I just couldn't get away. But our buddy my co-host on Man Seeks Adventure, Dave Merrick, was again a judge at Pebble Beach. And he, along with the upper executives at Acura, they hosted their unveiling of their new car, which I think you guys went to, didn't you?
We did. So Dave was everywhere because Dave somehow, I think there's more than one Dave Merrick, because I don't know how it's possible. somebody must be cloning him. Yes, when we got up there, we went to two events right away at Thursday. We tried to stack them back to back, and it just worked out. A Ford event and the Acura event, and Acura had their production version of their all-electric SUV called the ZDX, which we saw the concept vehicle last year. And if you remember, the concept vehicle was at the Grand Prix of Long Beach.
Right.
Right. It's, you know, you're like, hey, it's a really good SUV, but it's got no side mirrors or door handles. And you're like, well, that's why it looks so good. But it turns out this is a very, very nice, piece, and got to get in it this time and see what it's all about. And these days getting into the EV world is very expensive to do. So there's a lot of partnerships between auto manufacturers, just sharing some of the basics, right? Some of them, like as we're here talking, they just dropped off the Toyota Supra, which is obviously very close to a BMW Z4. But some vehicles go, well, we're just going to share some of the basic architecture, basically like the floor pans and the suspension mounting points, right? Or where the battery would bolt in. But then that's it. Everything else is off the table. And in the case of this Acura, It's actually shared with Cadillac Lyriq. The Cadillac all-electric SUV has a shared platform, but I think you'll see what Acura did with it is pretty interesting. They've actually even made more room in it than I think what Cadillac has done. It's nice.
Yeah, they think through their vehicles quite well, and we've driven, you know, pretty much all their SUVs, and they're all great vehicles. So it's always a nice chance to get and see them first, and miss them. I will tell you the secret of why Dave can get around up there so easily, because while you're walking back to the parking lot and trying to find your car along with everyone else after each event,
yeah,
has a driver in a car that is waiting for him curbside, and it just shoots him to the next thing ahead of traffic, and like when you come down to Carmel, when everyone else is trying to find a parking place up through the neighborhoods,
he could just drop you off and then wander off into the distance and then come back when he gets called back. Yeah, no, it's super.
Says, hey, I'm on this street. They pick him up and he goes to the next. So
it's super convenient for sure. And it also just makes everyone happier. Like Dave's life is way happier because he's got that car there. So rolling into a Monterey Ford. Car Week, Ford. So this was actually pretty big news from Ford. A car that they debuted at the event, but let's just step back for a second and talk about they debuted a car at Monterey Car Week. And we're seeing more and more of these car companies kind of stepping away from the conventional auto show and utilizing events. Obviously we've seen Porsche do it with Rennsport. We see it at Goodwood and now Monterey Car Week. And now even the Quail has kind of shifted. There's been debuts at the Quail, but now the Quail is like, you know, if you're part of the media, you're just getting bombarded with the press releases. And it's kind of like when we go to SEMA show and you get the press schedule, it's like this car's debuted at 9 to 9:15. And then at 9:20, you go to the next booth and the next booth. And that's the Quail now, right? Like, cars are being debuted, and it's pretty impressive.
Well, we saw it over this progression. You know, at first there was one, then there was two, and now it's like you said, it's a luxury and performance row, you know, of debuts.
It is. So they've always had like this incredible car show on the lawn, basically in the middle of the Quail, and it's curated by Gordon McCall and his team. And he always has like a couple of really wacky themes going on. And it's fantastic. And then around the outside of that middle section is the food and beverage.
The companies. Best part of it.
Yeah.
The food and beverage sampling.
And the manufacturer displays. But now it seemed like every manufacturer display was debuting a vehicle. It wasn't just to bring it and show it. Everybody there had something new to show off. And yeah, you're seeing everything from Myers Manx to Singer to Bugatti, Gordon Murray. But at the same time, while Woodward Dream Cruise is happening in Detroit, interesting that Ford selected the Monterey Car Week to debut their new car. Now,
wait a minute. Is it the people that can afford?
Yeah, I was just going to say. I was going to say they are kind of catering to the wallets of this audience. So, Ford debuted the Mustang GTD, and if you haven't seen it online yet, you just haven't been online. Basically.
Wait. I'm going to stop you. You're like Mr. Ford Mustang.
Yes.
I have an opinion from the photos that I saw.
Yeah. Okay.
What is your opinion?
Okay. First, let me just quickly explain on what it is. Basically, what this is Ford was developing the race cars for Le Mans, and they work with a group called Multimatic. You've probably heard that before.
Sure.
And Jim Farley and his team, you know, he had a lot of thoughts, and I got an interview with him, and he has like a 5-minute answer to why this exists. But it comes down to this. It comes down to, and he's such a fan of racing, and he's a racing car driver. He basically comes down to, he's like, the Le Mans car is so badass. Can we make one for the street? And they said, we'll be right back. And then they called them. They're like, yeah. And that's what this is. This is a turned up to 11, over the top Mustang, if you will, that's in the supercar category. Okay. That being said, you've seen the pictures. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts?
And I'm going to be the first to say that I've done this with other cars where you see the photos, but when you see it in person, it's a little different. To me, it looked a little misproportioned. It looked like the front end was really huge. I didn't dig the way the side, you know, outlet inlet in the front fenders broke the car in half. It kind of like it was moving along, and then all of a sudden, boom, wait a minute. Oh, now we're starting over. And and I was a little weirded out by the rear wide body. It looked a little strange to me as well. Now, set me straight if there's a setting straight, Matt.
Well, listen, it is very aggressive. So you're talking about the front vents, the front fender vents that mm-hmm. kind of come behind the wheel and on top of the wheel. And I guess the answer to it is function over form for sure on this car. This car, there isn't anything on this car that is just purely decorative. Like even the wing in the back, you can see the wing sort of attaches to the C pillars and kind of comes out more straight.
I didn't see that.
That's fixed. But then the leading edge of the wing is an active wing, and it definitely moves. Massive brakes, magnesium wheels.
That was another thing. I did not dig the wheels. I looked at the wheels, and it's not that I just, my eye goes right to those. And as a guy in the wheel industry and a wheel designer, the wheels should never overtake the vehicle. And that did. It did for me. It didn't work. But
the wheels. So one of the things that came up was like, why not carbon fiber wheels that mm-hmm. the GT500 has had, the 4GT has had, and it's very race oriented and it's lighter weight. And we don't really have the clear answer on that yet. We didn't have enough time to get into this.
I can tell you why. What was the development time on this vehicle?
Oh, it was super quick.
Yeah,
it was quick. Yeah.
Because to develop a functional wheel that could literally make it through the, you know, their design testing and everything, I bet they went with magnesium because it was easier to get it into the product flow in the time they had to do it.
Now, it's interesting you say that because yes, I agree 100%. But they've also already developed wheels like for GT and GT500, and because this car is like a 15 to 18 months before it actually gets delivered, I bet between now and then it has an optional carbon fiber wheel. I bet if you, so
by then they might. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's going to happen is the way we're told so far is this will have like an invitation and a list, like an application, like the 4GT, and it will be limited run, but they didn't exactly explain how much. Is it going to be like 4GT? Is it going to be like 250 cars a year for 4 years? Or is it going to be like a 2-year thing? I'm not exactly sure. But if you remember that once you submitted your application, then you got the box in the mail and you selected the, you know, you select the colors and stuff. I bet there's going to be a few options, like the very aggressive wing we're talking about, I believe is an option. And I bet there's going to be a couple of wheel options, or at least a carbon fiber and a magnesium option, which is interesting because I'm not even sure which one you'd go with, carbon fiber, magnesium. You really have to kind of see them. I'm sure people will be like, I want both, like check the box for both. So It's essentially a racing car with an interior. I think they have the engine pushed back. It's a little bit more front mid. And it's got a very aggressive, like, front suspension that looks like a McPherson strut, but with a massive Brembo brake, carbon ceramic brakes. But when you see the build of the whole thing, it just, like, machined billet, like, it's
the
super.
Rear suspension is...
And the rear suspension is badass, right? It's got a cantilever suspension, yep. Basically where the rear seat would be. It's all exposed. You can see it. And yes, the sort of this aggressive aero that you see on it, very functional, a lot of air going through the car to various coolers, and making the aero
vent, and probably yes. The reason for that bulbous front end, because it creates downforce. I'm not saying I hate the car, I'm just saying when I saw it in photos, I kind of went, I want to see it in person, you know.
Now here is the thing, it's like, it's $300,000. That's what their price point, they think it's going to be, right? Obviously expensive. And again, it's like when you say it's a Mustang, you know, and you say it's a Mustang, you say it's $300,000, people are like, 300 grand for a Mustang. I'm like, it's just part of the branding package.
Right.
Right. There's no Mustang here. The body is all carbon fiber.
It's a GTD.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's just going to forever be called the GTD, right? No one's even going to say Mustang, because even at Ford, they don't say Ford GT. They're like, well, we developed the GT, and everyone's like, oh yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, now there might be a couple guys, like if I was to order one, I might tell my wife, oh, I put in an order for a Mustang. Don't worry.
Yeah. It's fine. It's all fine.
Next year.
The engine is the GT500 engine. It's the 5.2 liter supercharged V8. And it should be around 800 horsepower in this package. Now, that's not a big jump from the 760 that we currently have. I think this car would be pretty interesting if they said, we're doing a 5.2 liter twin turbo for this thing. But you can't really race it. And honestly, even the Le Mans cars are naturally aspirated. But you're right. Speed of development, and to get this actually within that price range and limited production, I think they needed to go with this engine. If they started developing an engine from scratch, the amount of time and expense.
Certification, all the things.
And certifications and emissions and everything. Like if they said, hey, we're going to do a 5.5 liter twin turbo V8, that's not even exists now, or not even in anything that they have. It would add so much more cost to the car. It's not that the engine is physically more, but if you're only going to make 1,000 units, you've got to amortize that over the course of, you know, the development on this car. So it would be a $400,000 or $500,000 Mustang.
It's truly a halo car.
Yeah. It's a halo car, but what's cool about it is sort of how it came to be. It was sort of an idea. I don't want to say it's Jim Farley specifically, but the team working on the racing cars, and he's been a big proponent. He's like, let's stick with gas engine cars for as long as we can. Let's go racing. You know, we're going drag racing. We're going sports car racing. We're going to Le Mans. Like, and he goes, and I didn't want to develop a prototype race car for Le Mans. He goes, that doesn't do anything for the brand really. Right. So they needed to get a sports car out there, and for him to look at it and go, why wouldn't we try to offer this to enthusiasts?
I love the thought process.
Anyway, we'll get into it more, and we'll go through the specs on the car and some other things, and you'll start seeing popping up some testing videos. You'll hear the sound. You'll get more into the car, but it is menacing. It is a badass car, and yes, it has kind of a low, sleek, looks longer overall, but the front looking as long as it is, also because the back is very wide, but then that wing gives it some length in the back,
right?
When it's attached to the C pillar, which is a very cool creative design, by the way. If that thing was just right off the trunk lid, and came up real short and fast, and kind of like the Senna wing, but then maybe hung it upside down like the Senna wing. Cool design, but I think this gives it some length, gives it, it accentuates that fastback look to it. Yeah, it's a badass car. And listen, like walking around the Quail on Friday, because we did Ford and Acura on Thursday night, went to the Quail right away on Friday, and Pininfarina had, you know, electric supercars, electric SUV concept car. Gordon Murray, which is another interview that I got, Gordon Murray had his T50 and his T33. The T50 is the three-seater fan car. The T33 is the two-seater smaller version. And then he brought a T50S, which is a track car. And then he brought a T33 Roadster. And I said, hey, Gordon, you don't strike me as a Roadster guy, because being such an engineering guy, it seems like now you're cutting the roof off. You're losing, you know, the structural integrity and the torsion, you know, specs and all that. And he was like, he's like, that's a very good question. You're very smart. Good job. I was like, thank you. Thank you. And he said, when we put pen to paper on the T33, he goes, I designed the Roadster. And he goes, and it met all of my specs. And then when I made a coupe, he goes, it was just a little cherry on the top. It just added a bonus and rigidity. He goes, but I didn't need it. I didn't,
right?
Yeah, he's like, I didn't need the top to do it. And I was like, oh, there you go. He's like, we had to do the Roadster first to meet his specs. By the way, super intriguing guy. I don't know when the interviews are going to release. Maybe we'll come up with a way to put some of them on
Very
Shift
precise,
and Steer as well.
Right?
Yeah, so when I interviewed Farley, Adam Kroll and I did it. We interviewed Farley, Jim Farley from Ford, and Gordon Murray. But it's easy for me to like go to those guys and go, give me the press release. I'll get the specs. We'll get your PR people. So we really didn't get too much into any of that with Jim Farley. It was really just about his racing, his love of racing, and how it's sort of directing, you know, the kind of influencing his direction of the company. And he was just like, listen, he goes, I know there's a lot of automotive CEOs that enjoy playing golf. He goes, like, I don't like golf. I like to race cars.
and
I go, listen, I don't think one is more expensive than the other. Have you been to, you know what the golf membership is probably at Pebble Beach, by the way? It's probably more than racing. And Gordon Murray, we even kind of got into like cars that influenced him and what he has in his collection, and his hot rodded Escort with the Cosworth engine in it. So there's some fun stuff there for
those
sure.
Are the best ones, Matt. I mean, years ago I had Craig Jackson on my show, and I said to him, I go, Craig, I don't want to talk about the auction. I know you want to promote the auction, we will do that, but I want to talk about, I've known you as a car restorer and the stuff you did.
Oh yeah, he's a fabricator.
And he was like, oh, nobody's ever asked me that. And we had this great conversation. And then you and I talked about it, and then you guys had him on
CarCast years ago. Yeah.
And he's
a fabricator. I mean, that guy grew up bending metal.
Well, and his dad made him, you know, like, you want a Corvette? You got to restore a Corvette. You know, yeah. And I mean, it was it's great to drag that out of these people, because they sometimes get in a different point of view, or they're having to promote the corporation so much, they don't get to talk about it. And that's,
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Hey, did you see?
I hope those interviews recorded.
I wasn't the one doing the buttons. Yeah. So blame it on me. Don't you hate that when you do that and you just think, oh, I hope that was all good.
I didn't have an engineer there. I didn't have the producer there. And I tried to record into the Zoom recorder, and one of the microphones wasn't working, and I can see the levels on one, and it looked like it was recording. And then, you know, when we're done and he hits stop, you're like, I don't see the file. Like, I don't know what's going on. So I'm just going to let,
you know what I started doing is the Zoom recorder. And then I always put my iPhone on voice memo and lay it on the table. And sometimes the damn iPhone records just as well.
And I meant to do that too, and I just forgot because we were so rushed. And we're at the track, and I was trying to, like, I don't know. There's going to be some noise, but anyway.
Hey,
listen, if it doesn't record, I'm just going to go through and write it all down and make the transcript available based on memory.
Transcript and yeah. Hire some people that are out there on the picket lines to come in and do it. One can be Jim Farley. One can be.
Yeah, you know, I'll write it up as a script. I'm like, let's read through this.
Hey, did you see up there an Aston Martin concept or debut that had a really funky front end?
I didn't get to the Aston Martin, like the Aston Martin house or whatever, to see it in person. But I was talking with Aaron Shelby, and, you know, understand everybody knows Shelby from the Shelby Mustang, Shelby Cobra. But Carroll Shelby, like, won Le Mans with Aston Martin. So there's deep roots in the Aston Martin racing and the Shelby family. So he was there at the event and showed me some pictures of this car, but yeah, crazy, over the top, and a manual transmission. If you notice that in the car. Yeah.
But the front end is just, it's, I don't know, man. We're going to have to find a photo and post it, because and then the way they painted it too, it almost looks like a car coming out of a car, you know, it's, or a big red tongue. You know, one or the other. It's crazy. So, okay, let's talk about the IRM auction.
I forgot what it was called.
I know, I can't think of what it was either. I tried to look it up.
Yeah.
That pristine, over-the-top restored Ferrari that sold for almost $2 million. The one you posted photos of.
So I got to think of the list of the RM stuff, but
the one that came in boxes of parts.
Yeah. So there was the barn find cars.
A single usable part.
Like, Adam and I went over there. We brought Sean with us. Sean is Adam's guy that, you know, is the fabricator, painter, welder, maintains all the cars. And we were looking at this thing, and what an angle, just a mangled mess, right? And I guess there was three cars, and this was one of them, and it was just a smashed up body and chassis.
Aluminum and then, fire don't mix.
I mean, Adam was more like, you've got the car, so now kind of rebuild and make one. And then Sean and I were like, you take what you have, you know, scan it, measure it, do everything to create files on it, and then try to find one of the other one or two real cars and try to scan that. And if your intention was to spend $2 million on this thing, would it be to maybe be the new company that repops recreations like the XKSS Jaguar and some of these cars now that are going for, you know, almost $1 million, because it's a repop of a car you can never really get. Like the XKS, it sold for like $13 million, right?
Or the 959 or something.
Or the 959. Or the 959 you could buy for $1 million and change, unless it's Kenepa's car, is $2 million change.
That's what I'm saying, but, like Kenepa's doing, yeah.
But like you could buy an XKSS repop from Jaguar Classic for like $1 million, or you can buy a real one for $14 million. Well, you buy this car for $2 million, you measure everything, you use it to create as many digital files as possible, and then you just like, we're going to try to tool up and make 10. You know, that's it. We're going to make 10. They're going to be, $1.9 million each, and see if you can turn it into a business. And I don't know what kind of engine you're going
to
use.
How difficult it would be to scan that mangled mess into a file.
What you need to do is try to find somebody that would let you look at and measure the finished car, and then you can see
the junk one.
Because the junk one had a rear axle, and it had an engine in pieces, but on a clean car you won't be able to see the tube frame chassis as much because it's got body and you don't want to touch
it.
Right. This car, you can see where it was connecting in the welds and stuff. And then you just start, you know, doing the math on this thing and going, this is what it looks like when it's done. This is what it looks like under the skin, albeit mangled up. Or you just say, I'm rich as fuck. The hell with it. I'm going to buy this mangled thing and I'm going to put it in a glass box in my living room and make a day of it.
It, for those of you that don't know what the hell we're talking about, it was a Ferrari 500 Mondial Spider Series 1 that they only made 13 of, and it was Spider coachwork. But this 54 Ferrari had been through a number of owners, and when it finally made it to California back in like the 70s, it was raced for a long time, but then it was wrecked and caught on fire. And when we're talking about...
It was balled up.
This thing goes back to those Hemi CUDAs that we saw when the CUDAs were doing $7 million and guys were pulling them out of like creeks, and all it was a VIN tag they were salvaging and then putting it around. I mean, there's nothing there. I mean, there's really nothing there. It's how did they, were you there when they actually sold it?
No, but so they sold it on the first night where we were at the Ford and Acura events, yeah. But they brought it back outside and put the display back together. So outside of the Portola Hotel, there's a big like cobblestone area where they bring cars out. And then there's like a couple steps up and it's like a little bit of rocks, like pebbles. And they built that out like a piece in a museum, and they had all of the junkyard cars there, right? And by the way, nothing washed, nothing clean, like set up on display. And they brought some like used tires and stuff for part of the display. And, you know, they made it look cool.
I was just wondering if when it was actually going across, if it was, you know, because they're always, you know, we've been there and it's in its own. All right, our next lot is, and they describe it. But I just would have loved to have heard like that little cart that it was on, if everybody was quiet and it's just like squeak, a squeak, a squeak, a squeak, and it comes right because usually it's this.
It was on a pallet,
and they rev the motor and it comes up, you know, and then they turn it off. But it would have been great, squeak, 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 and a few chuckles, you know, and
yeah. Then they're like 1.9, 1.6, like yeah, crazy stuff. Listen, RM, we went by a few of the auctions. RM was a hell of a presentation. They did $164 million in sales. They had bidders from 40 countries from all around the world. 86% sell-through rate, which is high, especially considering there was quite a few cars that had a reserve on it. They broke a record with the Lexus LFA. If you saw the white LFA that I posted, those cars are, you know, $600,000-$700,000 all day long. $1.1 million for an LFA. So good for anybody who has an LFA. I know someone who has an LFA, and I think he paid half. So good for him. But the XKSS Jaguar, I believe, was the top seller. $13,205,000. And then number two was a 59 Ferrari 410 Super America Coupe Series 3. $6.6 million. And then a 275 GTB4 Ferrari, which we've seen before. This one's almost $5.4 million. So
now the 250 GTO they're auctioning off in New York, they had that on display there, correct?
They did. And I don't know what the estimate's going to be on that, but it's going to be upwards of the most expensive auction cars of all time. Like, I'm not even sure what they're thinking.
You know, a car has a lot of cachet when they're doing an auction for a car, a group of cars. So it's
impressive. I mean, a little odd that it wasn't in Monterey and part of the docket, but also it was in the lobby of the Portola Hotel when you walk in, like that was there, and it got more attention and everything, and they had, you know, the display just for this car costs more than some people's auction events, you know, like.
I believe what they're doing with that, Matt, is we know that Sotheby's, you know, purchased RM, and I think they're trying to make that a very feature Sotheby's sale in New York City. And it's, you know, it's rightly so. That car is going to go for a tremendous amount of money. Okay, another car I wanted to ask you about. Did you happen to see the Rolls-Royce that has the audacious price tag, let's call it?
I didn't see that. Which...
Okay, they were talking about one based on a yacht, not a boat tail. Okay, we've seen the boat tail, but this was they're making four of them. They said they already have three sold at $30 million a car.
That's incredible.
When I when I heard this, I thought, no, they mean $3 million. And no, I went and verified it, and it was $30 million. And when you look at it, it does look like a Pininfarina yacht. It has the sail panels. It has the, you know, the wood backing. And, but.
Yeah.
$30 million, you know, that's the kind of money where you have so much, you just don't know what to do with it all. So, before we wrap up today's show, what else did you see up there that we gotta know about, or what did you do? What did you now? Yeah, there's always good food and drink there too.
I'm looking at it, by the way, and yeah, it does have champagne storage built in. That's
of course.
Nice.
I mean,
yeah,
it better come with a champagne cellar in a house somewhere that comes with it. You should get a house, a garage, a.
Oh, you get a watch though. I can never remember the name of it, but it's the.
Admiral Piaget, which is a yachting watch.
Yes. Well, Admiral. You get one of those. And it's mounted on the dash. So if you don't want to wear it,
you just have it mounted up there.
Yeah. But the watch is $26,200 and it sits in the dash and you can bring it with you.
So I wonder if there's like a gold plated anchor in the trunk that you can throw out.
I don't know. And, you know, it's like it's a two seater. It's just a. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm not sure where the $30 million is coming from. Millions for sure, but
wouldn't it be cool if they made it like those amphibia cars and it was like, yes, and you could drive it right into the bay and
yeah, for $30 million, listen, for $30 million, now you know you can buy a 140-foot yacht.
I know.
So 10,000 square feet.
Well, if you're buying that $30 million, you've got a 300-foot yacht, and you're going to park it up on the top and have a little crane that lifts it down when you get into port. So,
yeah. So, listen, Monterey Car Week was a blast as always. The weather was fantastic,
which can be sketchy some years. You don't ever know.
The track, of course, was on point. We were there for a bit, got to see some of the racing, grab some interviews. It ran into the Bruces, Meyer and Canepa, as you would expect. If you don't go out to Pebble Beach on Sunday, what they're doing at the track is they're doing a hill climb event. It's a time trial thing,
they
and they're running it backwards. They started it last year and it's cool. So it's got a little bit of this Goodwood Festival of Speed thing. So instead of just running, more vintage cars for the racing, and a lot of people were like not going to that because they were going to Pebble, and they said, I get it, if you're a Pebble Beach guy, cool, but if you do want to see something different, they were taking a lot of the crazy supercars that were often on display, especially at the Quail, and even bringing them out to the track Sunday. And now you've got, you know, Gordon Murray T50 going up the hill with, you know, Dario Franchini behind the wheel, and Gunther Works Porsches going up the hill backwards, and they're time trialing it. And I, you know, and a couple of vintage cars and stuff, you can kind of sign up and submit. But kind of like the Goodwood Festival of Speed is now the car companies are going, this is another great way for us to like bring something to the Quail. If it's not a concept car, maybe something a little more closer to production, and then let people hear it and see it and get video of it on Sunday at the track.
Uphill portion of the track or somewhere else.
So they do like the start finish line and then backwards, like up the corkscrew.
Okay. I got you. So backwards around the track. Well, that's cool. Yeah, because usually you come out of that big sweeper and then down through the corkscrews.
The
down
hard left to get on the straightaway past the grandstand by the suites. Well, they run it the other way.
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's interesting. And it's kind of I don't want to say it's one at a time. It is, but it's staggered. It's not like, you know, you can't get two cars out there.
Right.
You know, one, you know, a little behind the other. But it's
cool.
A cool event. Now we went to Pebble. We didn't get to see that, but they did a version of it at the Velocity Invitational as well. And that was cool to see. So great event. Some of the pre-war cars I'm not necessarily huge fans of, but one of the award winners was from the Mullen Museum, a Delahaye.
I love Delahayes.
But this beautiful red, you know, just beautiful, you know, big swoopy fenders, very French, everything kind of smooth on the side. You know, it's got the wheel skirts, and you look at the door handles, they're all kind of flush in like a modern day, like, you know, Tesla or Aston Martin.
So ahead of their time, yeah.
As it was rolling by, we all kind of stopped. By the way, just a bright red as well, with the chrome. We all kind of stopped. We're like, that is a gorgeous car, and it's massive, and it's just like a massive two seater,
yep.
You know, convertible. But it's just like, and as we start rolling around, we're like, oh, that's going to win something. And it did. It won whatever. Like,
and that's the thing about the Delahayes is they were always painted in these fabulous jewel tones. They were like, you know, brilliant blues or yellows or oranges or greens or like those reds, and awesome cars. And the bright work on those cars is always so tremendous.
A Mercedes was a winner, and it's the second year in a row that RM Sotheby's restoration shop won overall winner at Pebble.
They've been pretty dominant for years, man.
They've always been fantastic. You're right. But 2 years in a row now, they've won overall at Pebble Beach.
I know, which is hard to do. It's expensive to do. But that's how Rob got his start. I mean, he started restoring cars, bringing them to Barrett Jackson, and then decided to do his own auctions. And so,
well, 2 years in a row, they just raised their rates. So if you think you're going to go over to them now and go, hey, I'm going to do a Delahaye, they're like, good. It's going to be an $8 million restoration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Help me here, Matt. I'm trying to think of the trade school. Is it Universal Tech?
Wyotech?
No, it's
UTI? Universal Technical Institute?
I don't know. They actually, as part of their schooling, restored a early Mercedes, and it won its class.
I did see that. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. With some very generous donations that helped.
Well, did you see the donation that school just got? An anonymous donation of like $1 billion.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah.
So that school has now been catapulted into a whole new category. So
I am open to donations, by the way.
Yes, I am too. If anybody wants to support the University of Brad Fanshawe or Matt Andrews. So, any other notable highlights or?
The only other thing that was interesting was Gooding had a car on display in its private sales.
Okay.
So they didn't advertise the price, but it was a Porsche 935, and it's VIN 1 of 935s.
Was it
doesn't
white?
Have a lot of, yeah, yes,
I
it's
did
white.
See photos of it, yes.
Yes, because it was also, it's owned by Jerry Seinfeld. So it's a Seinfeld car. It's a really nice, but the guy restored it, not a familiar name, but his name is Joey Cavallari, and he is the guy, right? He did, this may be getting a little too deep, but years ago, John Morton drove a Scarab at Monterey and wrecked it, like rolled it. And maybe 8 or 10 years ago, I saw it in Joey's shop and he was restoring it. The shop is like an operating room. They just walk around with like white overalls on and the bib, and they're just like shaping metal. And I want to say, because he does so much Porsche stuff now with Seinfeld, that I think Jerry bought the building next door and put a hole in the wall and just kind of connected them together. Anyway, it's a Seinfeld 935. It's VIN number one of the 935s. Not a lot of racing history, but a really cool piece.
Gorgeous car.
And Joey Cavallari's work on this thing is just top notch. So yeah, cool piece. I'm sure it'll start to pop up more and more as they start to advertise
and
the sale.
And you are correct on that shop, because when I was there the last time, I remember there's all these cars and all this metal shaping, and I'm standing there looking at the handrails because they've got an upper deck for like part storage.
Yeah.
And the handrails are like 1.5-inch stainless steel. They go, it seemed like, for miles, and they're like three, and all the welds are absolutely perfect, and then everything's polished. Yeah. I'm just going, my God, what did these handrails cost? You know, I
mean, it's actually, yes. And it's funny you mentioned that, because in Adam's garage that he was building out by his house, we had like this staircase company, a View Rail, make like a floating staircase, right? It's got like a backbone beam and the glass and the wood steps, and it kind of comes down and then turns again, right? So it's kind
that
of U-shaped
nice staircase. And, I built, but yes,
right. And you know, and then they shipped these pieces. They're like, here's some wood with some like cast aluminum mounts, and you can mount a railing on it. And Sean in the shop was like, we're not doing that. We're not doing that at all. And he bent up stainless steel tubing on the pipe bender, all mandrel bent, and then to get pieces to sort of fit together, because it would go up and sort of S and turn, right, is hand welded them, smooth them down, brushed the whole thing, and now we've got like this one railing going all the way up. And he's nice. And like he had bent the pieces and then welded it together and finished it like on site as a single piece.
And the tubing bender was going when it was trying to bend that stuff,
and you couldn't even do it all on. You couldn't do it as one run on the tubing bed.
Oh, like no. Yeah.
You would still have to, weld and do it and put it together. So yeah. And yeah, it's funny, cause you're like, oh, that looks amazing. And he's like, yeah, it's a lot of work. And I go, but it's done. He's like, no, that's only the right height, the right side rail. I got to do one for the left.
Exactly.
Two of them.
I know.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap things up, and we'll hopefully we'll check in with Aaron next time.
Aaron,
see how he's doing.
He made it back from the Great White North, but then he had some other show or something to go to, and but
he's 10 hours of driving in the rain right now. I know,
yeah,
he's doing that.
I don't know where
he's mud going. And rain.
I guess he just couldn't get enough of it.
Couldn't get enough.
So, all right, everybody. Matt, where can they find us online?
Shiftandsteer.com is the website. You can give me a follow at Motorator, and Drink Bravago is the website. Thanks for ordering.
And
we brought some with us. We drank it at the track. We had a good time.
I saw your photos where you were matching cans to cars.
Yeah, not just cars. That was a Ferrari 312. I don't know. It's like very, very expensive. Probably one of the most expensive cars at the track.
You can see all Aaron's adventures at Aaron Hagar on Instagram. Find me at Bradley_Fanshaw on Instagram. And you need wheels? We make the best billet wheels. Bonspeed, BONSPEED. And go check us out online or hit us up for a catalog. Hey, everybody. Excuse me.
He's going to say, we'll be back next week. And that's a promise, not a threat.
That's
but
exactly
he can't
what
breathe.
I meant to say, but I was all choked up, man. All right, everybody. Thanks.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.